time now for our legend of the game, Raymond, and I think we're both excited about the fact that our special guest today is Shane Gould, AMMBE, a legend of Australian swimming, a legend of Australian sport, to be honest, now a legend of Australian television following winning Australian Survivor. Looking forward to having a chat. She joined us on the line. G'day, Shane.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, well, very well. What's it good like morning, being Shane. Known more as a television star than an Olympian?
Oh, a little bit more ephemeral, I think, than an Olympic achievement. I'm reveling in it at the moment. It was just one of those things. You've got to do some crazy things in your life sometimes, and that was it. It took me 2 months to decide to go on the program, and I thought, oh, this is probably the better of all the reality TV shows.
Yeah.
And I was correct, and so I'm glad I did go on it because, ended up winning it, huh?
Well, the good news for everybody in sport, Shane, is that if you weren't aware of Shane Gould before Survivor, people went back and checked on your past and hopefully, like Jimmy and I, realised what an absolute legend you've been for Australian sport. And when we have people on as our guest, as our legend each Sunday, we like to take them right back to the start and find out, Shane, where that love for swimming initially came from.
Yes, look, you know, you're correct about the love of your sport. You know, if you're going to play a sport, you've got to enjoy doing it. And it does start from a pleasure. And I'm really saddened to hear a lot of swimmers, you know, when they finish their career, they're sick of it. You know, they don't enjoy it. It seems like the competition squeezed the enjoyment out of it. But I started when I was a little tacker, actually. My parents had work in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, and I swam around in the harbour there, in Sydney Harbour, around Rose Bay and Vaucluse, and then we moved to Fiji, and it was warm.
Yeah.
My dad had a job at the airport, and so we just spent a lot of time, my older sister and I, in the water, and I'd actually had an accident, and this is a lot of people start sports out too because of an accident, particularly swimming, whether it's asthma or some breathing problem. And but I didn't have a breathing problem, but I had an accident where I poured boiling hot water over my chest and it reacted with a smallpox injection I'd had. And I had brain damage, and I didn't have brain damage, it was borderline. But some of my siblings might think that I'd had brain damage.
Did you?
So it kind of started there, and then I had a few swimming lessons, and I was just in the water a lot. And I think that's the best way. People often ask me, "How do you teach your kids to swim? You know, when do you start swimming lessons?" I said, "Well, when in their first bath. Their first bath is their first swimming lesson."
Yeah.
Just take your kid to the water. A lot of kids don't like going to swimming lessons because it's just about lessons. You've got to have context. So I had loads of context, you know, being in rivers and the sea and the swimming pool in Fiji. And then same thing when I came back to Australia when I was 9. Mm. And my older sister and I was two of those kids who had super amounts of energy and only swimming a couple of times a week in some lessons. And help my parents to stay sane with our two energetic old kids there. So it kind of starts like that, and I'm sure everyone's got a story like that. You know, every sporting legend, and I played netball, and I played did gymnastics. I walked the dog. You know, caught body waves. You know, so I was just a super physical kid. And then gradually I eliminated other sports. And when I was 13, I concentrated on swimming and started breaking state and national records. And then 14, I broke my first world record. And I was on a European tour with some other Australian swimmers. And then in 1972, at the Munich Olympics, I won, won 5 medals.
Mm. Yeah, you said you broke a few world records. As Ray pointed out earlier, you held every world record from 100 metres to the 1,500 metres. Never been done before, never been done since. Is that the reason you concentrated on swimming and because of your proficiency at it, Shane?
I just enjoyed it. I like moving in the water. I like the feeling of the water. I like to compete, and I was good at swimming. So that just encourages you. You know, you win a race, or you feel good about yourself winning something, or not even winning, but doing it. And that's an encouragement in itself. And then, you know, you have adults patting you on the back, and, you know, it's good strokes for your ego. keep doing that. And, then you start to get an identity. Oh, I'm a swimmer, or I'm a footballer, or I'm a good sport, you know, good at doing sports. And so it's just an encouragement, I think, to keep doing it. But at the fundamental level, yes, I did enjoy it, but I was able to, I had that versatility. So a lot of people specialise in, say, 100 metres backstroke. Well, why not do 200 metres breaststroke as well? And you know, just get in the water and have a race, and be versatile in what you can do, because in the races you do, because you can learn a lot. And what you learn from doing a 200 breaststroke, if you're a 100 backstroker, is you can transfer to your 100 backstroke. So I just think I did have that versatility, but I'm sure if I'd stayed in it longer than when I quit when I was 17, that I'm sure I would have been able to I would have had to specialise more. I think when girls are 14, 15, 16, they're actually they're like superwomen compared to guys, and that you've got your peak of peak ratio of fat to muscle, and it's before you're fully formed as a woman, and you've still got some kid-like attitudes, and so I think a lot of kids can swim, girls can swim pretty fast at that age, and because it's a physiological thing. But I think definitely if I'd stayed in, I would have had to specialise more, probably more for the 100, 200, 400 events.
Mm-hmm. Shana, I'm interested in how you approached the 72 Munich Olympics, because you just mentioned then you were still a teenager, you were still young, you still had kid-like attitudes, etc. But your star was already had already risen. You were Sportswoman of the World the year before in 71, so everyone knew about Shane Gould. Australia, I was only a kid, but I remember reading up when I was very young about Shane Gould and how she'd win 5 gold medals for Australia. How did you handle that pressure, knowing that the whole nation was swimming with you effectively?
Well, I probably didn't know that the whole nation was behind me, but I did know that I wanted to do that. I think the pressure I put on myself was much greater than any public pressure. I was supremely confident of my physical capacities. So that carried me through, you know, put me in the on the starting blocks, and you know, I just seemed to have a natural ability to work things out, you know, how to race, how to pace myself, how to train, and the nuances of watching my competitors, and then, you know, if someone was ahead of me, well, I could dig deep and pull out a bit more, find a bit more energy and effort. So, but it was extraordinary. You know, one of my sisters, Debbie, she lives in Sydney, and she came to the Survivor finale event on the 5th of October when the winner was announced. And she, you know, I've been talking to her, and she said, "Oh, Shaney, the publicity that you're getting now for Survivor, it's just a pinch on what we had." You know, what the family endured when and had to manage in 1972. So, you know, I was a bit oblivious of it, and my sisters, you know, bore the brunt of it. I had three sisters, and my parents were my managers, basically filtering the requests for media. So, so it was really that was more. I guess that was the build up to it. But my parents did cushion me from it, but again, I was just supremely physically confident, and had that competence to go with the competition. I love to compete.
Mm. Shane, that's funny you used the word endure. Your family had to endure it rather than celebrate all this, these great achievements and the publicity ensued.
No, that's two different things. I want to be sure. No, you know, it's two different things. One is managing success.
Yes.
And the other is celebrating success.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think a lot of athletes these days particularly have trouble with how to manage success, and they get giddy about it.
Mm.
You know, they get seduced by their fame. You know, so it's how do you manage the success that you have? How do you keep on a level? Well, you can't keep on a level playing field because on a emotional and social level, because you're elevated.
Yeah.
And you need to learn how to manage that, and it's hard. Mm. It's hard to stay grounded and you know, not do stupid things with alcohol or drugs. Mm. Or so many athletes have this sense of entitlement. You know, just because they're good at what they do and people admire them, and you know, it just goes to their head. You know, you've got to keep grounded. And so that managing success is one thing, but celebrating success is another. Yes, I was super proud and had had celebrations, the sort of celebrations that a 15-year-old can do.
Mm.
And my family was super proud, and Australia, of course, was proud. Mm. And I was named Australian of the Year, and at that time, the Australian of the Year award was for the person who's brought the most attention to the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't just known in Australia; I was known throughout Europe, particularly because the Olympics were in Germany, and there was a lot of press in Germany and in Europe. So that's a bit of a riff, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That's my past and perspectives. No, they're adult perspectives I have now.
Yeah.
But it's some lessons we can learn from that from 1972. It still applied today, no doubt, Shane. Shane, can I ask you about the Munich Olympics and, what became an extraordinary event in its own right for the wrong reasons, and that was the terrorism that we saw with the Israeli athletes. As an athlete in that village going through what was happening at the time, what was that like? Because I remember reading and watching the TV at the time, and there was some talk of the Olympics actually being abandoned halfway through it. Then after a couple of days, it continued. Can you give us a sense of what it was like as athletes in the village during that period?
Yes. Well, what happened is that there was a lot of terrorism in the 1970s. There was planes being hijacked and people being taken hostage. And so the Palestinians, the PLO, the people from the PLO, came to the men's village in Munich and took 11 Israeli athletes and officials hostage. And I think two were killed in the village, and then the others were taken out. My facts might not be 100%, but the others were taken out away from the village, and then all of the Israelis were killed, and in the helicopter they were in blew up. And so there was this act of terrorism in the Olympic Village. Now, it occurred the night after the swimming finished. In the Olympics, because swimming and athletics are the two big popular sports, they put the swimming on in the first week and then the athletics on the second week. So the swimming had finished on the Sunday night, and it was the Monday morning when that terrorism attack occurred. And then it played out all during that Monday, and the mood in the village, of course, when I went to get breakfast, it was just dead, like there was just no one around. There was no one walking around. There were guys with machine guns, German soldiers with machine guns. And, of course, we were, told what happened. And then the Australian team went out of the village for the day to do a swimming demonstration and, a bit of some diplomacy in a town away from Munich. So the whole thing was played out. Anyhow, when we got back and then we were standing around a black and white television, and it was all being described in German, so most of us couldn't understand what was going on. And I think even the media didn't know what was going on. They didn't have a perspective. And they were uncertain about whether more attack was going to happen. And so I was taken out of the village because they didn't know if successful people like myself and Mark Spitz happened to be of Jewish origin. He won 7 gold medals for America in the pool. And, 4¾. He won 4 individual and 3 relays.
Yeah.
I love statistics. Yeah. So there was tension there, and the International Olympic Committee just didn't know what to do. Mm. But Avery Brundage, the president of the Olympic Committee, and the committee decided, along with talking with international diplomats and presidents and armies, and they decided the Olympic movement had to override that tourism attack and continue on. So we didn't know a lot about what was going on, but I didn't get to celebrate, in the village and watch other events. And I really didn't know the overview of what had happened until I read Time magazine on the way home a week later.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
But, of course, two movies, a documentary and a movie's been made of it, and we understand even more about what happened. But it was a terrible time. Terrorism is still around, but but it was very very raw, and we had to be frisked at airports. They didn't have electronic things they do now, and so it was very much in your face, and but my swimming had finished, but the athletes had to pick themselves up and re-motivate to do their running and track things.
Yeah, just amazing. Speaking of time, Shane, we've run out of time.
No problem.
Fascinating, Shane.
Absolutely fascinating. To think we might have thought we were going to talk about swimming and we were talking about world events such as that. It's incredible.
It's so intertwined, though, Jim, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's so
absolutely.
Intertwined with that 72 Olympics.
Absolutely.
And they say sport and politics don't mix, but they do.
Of course they have.
They all are intertwined because they're human beings.
Yes.
And politics about human beings and sports about that being human too, so it's all intertwined. But hopefully, the sport overrides. That the joy of playing sport and the good healthy competition can be the focus, not the argy bargy of politics.
Yeah. Well, you're a remarkable human, Shane, for what you've achieved in the swimming pool, and certainly the way you've described that for our listeners this morning. We do appreciate it. Thank you very much for being our legend of the game this morning.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Shane.
There she is, Shane Gould. Well, we'll take your thoughts on that. Just incredible. Wow. What a story. 13:53:53. We'll take a break. We'll come back for a sports update, but we need to regather ourselves here, Raymond, after that. Just incredible.
A couple of SMSs had a bit of a go at me asking the wrong question, but I think I had to ask about the Munich massacre, Jim, because that is such a central part of what those games were about. And Shane spoke so eloquently about it, didn't she?
Absolutely.